Freedom of Marketing, chapter 18, verse 25.
Aham hi
tara
bhutanam
abhito
antaram
bahi
bhavikanam
yata
tam
var suffering any separation from me, since I pervade all existence.
Your unhappiness must be due to lack of discrimination. Therefore, please take this instruction from me, which will remove your ignorance. But the truth of the matter is that you gopis were in your previous lives great masters of yoga, and thus you must already know the science of Gyan Yoga. Furthermore, whether I try to teach this to you in person or through my representatives such as Uddhava, I will not produce the desired result. Gyan Yoga simply causes suffering for those who are fully immersed in the true love of Gyan. Text 46. In this way, all created beings reside in the basic elements of creation, while the supreme souls pervade the creation, remaining in their own true identity. We should see both of these, the material creation and the self, as manifest within me, the imperishable supreme truth. Further, one should properly understand the relationships among the material objects of this world, the elements comprising the basic substance, the individual spirit souls, and the one supreme soul. The various objects of material enjoyment, such as pots, rivers, and mountains, are manufactured from the basic material elements, earth, water, fire, and so on. These elements pervade material things at their cause, while the spirit souls pervade them in their special role as their enjoyer. And all the material elements, their products and the energies, are all manifested within and pervaded by the imperishable purpose of the complete supreme soul, Krishna. Again, with realization, these facts should feel no separation from the Lord in any situation, but the gopis of Raja are much more elevated in their Christian consciousness than ordinary jnanis. Because of their intense love for Krishna in this most human life, all the practical aspects, as a young cowherd boy in Krishna's internal potency, Yoga Maya, cover their knowledge of this majestic aspect, such as its all pervasiveness. Thus, the gopis were able to relish the intense ecstasy caused by their love and separation from him. Only in jest is Sri Krishna describing to them a lack of spiritual discrimination. Translation for today's time, the beginning and end of all created beings that exist both within and without them, just as the elements, ether, water, earth, air, and fire are the beginning and end of all material objects and exist both within and without them. So here we see that Krishna is speaking to the gopis, and he's actually giving them a lecture on Yama, which is a little bit strange because the Jnanis and the yogis and the Kamis are rejected as devotees. And at best, you can have a bhakta who has a little bit of jnana, but it's called a jnanistra bhakta, or a karmistra bhakta, or a yoganistra bhakta. They're somewhat acceptable. But none of those types of devotees attain a position of personal relationship with Krishna. And the gopis have the highest relationship with Krishna. So it is impossible that they can have jnana or even jnanistra bhakti or yoga or yoganistra bhakti. They are much beyond that. So how is it that Krishna is preaching to them about jnana? So it is somewhat contrary. If we examine previously in the Bhagavatam, in the chapter of the where Krishna sends the message to Uddhava, to the gopis, when we examine that message, then we will also see that Krishna is actually preaching jnana to the gopis. And the message is very similar to this. You should understand that I am pervading all beings. So therefore, you should be satisfied by this idea in your heart. And I don't have to come back to the Dhamma. You can simply think of me like a Jnani, that I am everywhere. I pervade everything. And that you should be very satisfied with that. So this is contrary to the nature of Krishna, because he already rejects Jnana and Jnana and Sarvati and all these other things. And yet, he's teaching the highest devotees to become jnanis. How is it possible? It's not possible. So we cannot take these words seriously when Krishna says something like this. So we can take these words in two ways. One, we can take it as a joke, and Krishna's simply teasing them. Secondly, we can take it that actually there must be another meaning somewhere deeper in these words.
So that actually is what Vishnu Chakravarti does with the whole letter that Uddhava sends to, how Krishna sends to Uddhava, that letter which Krishna gives to the gopis. So that actually can have another meaning to it. And like I said yesterday, sometimes the Bhagavad does not speak correctly. And so it hides the truth. So it gives an appearance of jnana on that letter, and at the same time, the devotee understands this is very contrary to the nature of Krishna and the nature of Bhagavad. How can jnana become so glorified? So therefore, there's another meaning of the words. This is not the only place in Bhagavad, but find many places where there's two meanings to a verse. For instance, when some of the demons criticize Krishna, or even the devatas or the avatars are criticized by someone like Paranyaksha. Fellow Paranyaksha calls Vishnu, he says he's like a forest animal or whatever, that's Brahma. They call him a forest animal, etc. So when the demons speak these words, yes, they have that meaning, but then there's another meaning of the words also, which is actually a praise of the Supreme Lord. So sometimes we can take one sentence and we can give two different opposite meanings to it. One is criticizing Krishna, one is praising Krishna. Now the superficial meaning, of course, of the demon is to criticize Krishna. But actually the Lord can never be criticized. So therefore, the Bhagavatam is such that it makes us do a praise of Krishna. So therefore, Sukadeva Goswami arranges in such a way we can take another meaning of it. So this is often so in the Bhagavatam, we'll find there'll be a double meaning. Because we don't ever want to criticize the Supreme Lord. So when the demons start criticizing Krishna, we can take another meaning of it. So similarly, in this case where Krishna speaks, he speaks with Krishna, of course, has got all wonderful qualities. So one of the qualities, of course, is he's a very expert seeker. Another quality of Krishna is that he's very clever. Another quality of Krishna is that he is gambhira, or very deep, and no one can understand his true intentions. He is gambhira, which means very inscrutable. So we never know exactly what he's trying to do or what he means by his words. Similar, we'll see in Kumaras left the spiritual world, and then they got angry at the doorkeepers and they cursed the doorkeepers. And then Vishnu came out and Vishnu spoke. And so Vishnu spoke, and then the Kumaras were in great reverence and ecstasy. But actually didn't understand what the Lord said. What does he mean? So the Lord has deep meaning the words. And then when he actually told the Jayadeep that come to the material world, he said there's demons like that. That also has another meaning to it. So the Lord often speaks in such a way that there is one meaning on the surface and one meaning beneath it. This is also there, of course, such words are there, as I said, because the Bhagavatam is like Mohini, and it covers up meaning intentionally to confuse some people. So in order to make the Jnanis think the Jnana is superior to them, Krishna gives Jnana to the gopis, and therefore the Jnani can think, oh, you see here, actually, superior to Bhakti is Jnana, because ultimately Krishna preaches Jnana to the gopis after everything is said and done, and then he preaches Jnana. And this is the solution to everything. So, in this way, the Jnanis are very satisfied. This is the conclusion of the Bhagavad. But, of course, we know that this is not the conclusion, this is not the intention of Sukadeva Goswami or Vyasadeva. It's just the opposite. Jnana and karma and yoga are actually rejected as the process, and only pure bhakti is recommended as the process. And in that process of bhakti, the gopis are the highest. They are the highest example of bhakti. So therefore, for Krishna to be Jnana would be very contrary to the whole conclusion of Bhagavatam. And therefore the devotees will understand. It doesn't really mean this. When Krishna is teaching Jnana, it's not real Jnana. He doesn't really mean it. So we take it as some sort of joke, or we can take another meaning to it. So that's how we should understand these words. Of course, we should also understand there's nothing wrong with this on one level of realization. So, here Krishna says, I am the beginning and end of all beings. I am the creator. I am the destroyer of everything. There's nothing wrong with that. Bhagavad Gita also says the same thing. I am inside and outside of everything. Just as the material elements, the five material elements, are within all of the objects and also outside. They exist separately and also pervade all the objects. So Krishna says, this is how I am also. And therefore, the next verse when he says, because of that, therefore, you should never feel separate from me because I'm everywhere. So there should be no separation and no pain that I have not returned to Raja. Because you can understand through the material elements and through all living entities that I exist everywhere. So this is what Krishna is trying to say. So for Paramahayogis and Gyanis, this is fine. They are very satisfied with this. We can see the Lord in all things. But that is not the satisfaction of the devotee. The ultimate desire of the devotee is to serve the Supreme Lord personally and please Him. It's not they want to see the Lord everywhere, pervading everywhere. That is not their desire. Their desire simply is to please the Lord. So that is why it is said in relation to pure bhakti that the devotees actually do not desire to have solokya and to live on the same planet as the Lord, or to have a similar form like the Lord, or spiritual form, or to be close to the Lord, or to have powers like the Lord, or converge into the Lord. These are not the desires of the devotee at all. The devotee wants service. And if he has no service, if he gets his other things, he will reject them. If there is sarupya, salopya, samipya without service to the Lord, there's no meaning for the devotee at all. It's useless. So, the primary interest of the devotee is somehow he wants to serve the Lord. And why is that? Because the devotee has great attraction to the Lord, great love of the Lord. So an expression of love is service. We do something to please a person when we love them. So there are many levels of devotees. And the highest devotees are those who give themselves completely to the Supreme Lord. Completely. And the example of that is the gopis. They give themselves completely to Krishna. And Krishna actually expressed this during the Rasa-lila. He said, well, you have given up everything to come to me when I played my flute, and then you left your husband, and you left your children, and you left your mothers and fathers. And therefore, you're condemned by society. But you do not care for that. You don't care about the criticism. You only care for me. So you've given up everything. I cannot do that. I cannot give up other Yasoda and then the Maharaj. You have given up your mother and father. You've given up your husband and children. I don't have any wife and I don't have any children. So you surrender to me more than I can surrender to you. Even though Krishna says, as accordingly as you surrender unto me, I surrender unto you. But the gopis are in such a state that they've done something that Krishna cannot respond to equally. He cannot do better than them. He cannot come up to their level of surrender. So, in other words, the gopis' surrender is complete. They've given themselves completely to Krishna. And therefore they're considered the highest devotees, and Krishna cannot even respond properly to them. So therefore a jhana and yoga and karma or any other process would be unheard of if they could ever think of anything like this. So that is why these words such as meditate on me and in all the material elements or in your heart, whatever, are not proper. All they want to do is serve the Lord, and nothing else will satisfy them. They've given up everything for the Supreme Lord, and they want to serve Him. So there's nothing wrong with these statements of the Lord that here. Yes, that's true. And it is also necessary for devotees to have this type of dhyana. We have to understand the powers of the Lord as far as sadhana bhakti is concerned. And we have to understand the difference between the Lord and ourselves. So that knowledge is useful. And therefore, it's in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's also there in the Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures. So we'll have an understanding of the powers of God. And not only the powers of God, but how God is very close to us at all times. Nevertheless, when one reaches the stage of realization, such jnana may get covered over. Now, it will not get covered over on the lower levels of realization, but it gets covered over when one reaches the stage of worshiping Krishna in Vrindavan and Raja. And then that jnana is covered over. And it's no longer significant. Is there to some degree in Vasudeva and Bhakti and the people of Mathura and Varna? They understand Krishna's God. So they appreciate that, yes, Krishna's everywhere. Krishna is great. Krishna is the creator. That creates all the material elements. He's very powerful. At the same time, they realize, yes, He is also our relative, the son, whatever. So it's kind of a mixed relationship. But in Vrindavan, the sweetness of the relationship of Krishna as child or as friend or lover is so strong that this has no significance. There's no appreciation for such things. Even if they're told when they're Krishna's pervading area, they're so what? We don't care. It's got nothing to do with the Krishna that we know. Okay? Krishna is our son. The realization in Vrindavan purity is the highest. So therefore, in that case, these words have no sense. It does have sense for the Dwarka Bhakti or the people of Vaikuntha. They also understand the greatness of the Lord. And for people that have mixed bhakti, that the Gyanis or Bhaktas or the Yogamis or Bhaktas, yes, this is fine. Such statements are fine. But not for the people of Vrindavan, and especially not for the Gopis, who have the most intense love of all. So that intense love completely rejects all of these things. In the there's a story of how Krishna disappeared, and then from the gopis in the forest, and the gopis were very disturbed and began searching for Krishna. So then Krishna played a joke, and he showed a four-handed form of Vishnu, and the gopis saw Vishnu. And they looked at Vishnu, and then they said, oh, this is Vishnu's Supreme Lord. Please tell us where Krishna is. We want to see Krishna. Can you please tell us where Krishna is? So they paid no attention to Vishnu, actually. They weren't interested in seeing Vishnu at all. They only wanted to see Krishna, even though they knew Vishnu's Supreme Lord. So such is the intensity of their love. As I said, the separation creates a more intense feeling of love, where there's both things involved in love, that is meeting and separation. So that takes place with all the different devotees. Sometimes the separation is momentary, and then Krishna and the gopis get together, as in the Rasa-lila, like Krishna hid himself and then they couldn't find him for some time and then he appeared again. So momentary. Even then, there's intense separation. So on the highest level of love, in higher level, we have prema, like a basic stage, bhava and prema, and then we get higher stages like sneha and raga and anuraga and man and mahabhava. So when we reach these very high stages, then a moment of separation feels like a yuga. As in the prayers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even a moment of separation is huge, it feels like a long period of time. Because of the great attachment. So when that takes place, when separation takes place, it is unbearable. That's what happens in the higher stage after Raga. Unbearable separation, momentary separation creates an unbearable feeling that one can no longer exist. That means when Mother Yashoda is separated from Krishna, momentarily that she feels like this. And when the gopis are separated from Krishna, they feel like this. So of course, in most cases, in the spiritual world, and even in Vrindavan, when Krishna performs pastimes, the separation is only momentary. It's a few moments, or it may go on for a few hours. So when Krishna goes out in the fields every morning, then he's separated from Nanda and Yashoda and the gopis, and then he comes back in the evening, so there may be a 6-hour separation. So that separation also creates great disturbance in everyone. And therefore, that increases their sense of love of Krishna, and they expect him at any time. Therefore, it's described how then in the evening time, and then all of the people of Russia gather on the roofs of the houses, and they're looking into the forest, as far in the forest, and they're looking in the sky, and they see little dust in the sky, then they know the cows are coming back. And they get very excited. And then gradually they hear something, notice that the cows moving, and then they see the figures coming, and they get more and more excited. And so the Mother Yashoda is there, Nanda is there, and the gopis are there, everyone is there, and they're very, very, very excited when they see Krishna come back. So, yeah, separation, and then finally they have meeting with Krishna, and then they're very satisfied. So that's the extent of the separation in the spiritual world, and even in Brahma usually. But then we have, in the pastimes on earth, we have a prolonged separation. And so we have here a very prolonged separation where Krishna leaves Vrindavan and he doesn't appear until after killing down the Bhakra, and he comes back to Vrindavan at that time. So it's maybe 100 years later he comes back. So it's a very intense separation. Or in other times, of course, he may, if he's in Dwarka, he may also leave Dwarka and go to Hastinapur. And then the people of Dwarka are separated from Krishna maybe for a few months. So there's some separation there also. And so that separation, that prolonged separation, a few months, or in this case, with the gopis and the Vrajavasis, many, many years, creates even more feelings of intense longing. So that is one unique feature of these pastimes when Krishna performs his pastime on earth, that there is this prolonged separation from Krishna. So what is the purpose of that? It all has a purpose, and the purpose of course is to, one, display the intense love, and to show the exalted nature of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, that they, by that prolonged separation, they exhibit the highest symptoms, which no other devotees show even in prolonged separation. So it shows the highest nature of the inhabitants of Vrindavan and her true devotees. So to do that. And the other, of course, is that when Krishna does meet his devotees, then there's even more intense love. So the separation leads to intense love on meeting again. So that the pain of love is compensated by the joy of life on meeting. So whatever intense pain of separation is felt, that is compensated for by the meeting and the great joy that is expressed there. So when Krishna meets the gopis, or Krishna meets Nanda and Yashoda, then that joy is very, very great, and they're completely satisfied again. In any case, the meaning here is that the Krishna does not abandon the devotee, and though there is separation, it is for a purpose, and then finally, it is resolved, and Krishna appears again, and he satisfies them even more completely. So there's no imperfection in the pastimes of Krishna. So the separation we find here is perhaps, it looks like pain, but we cannot have pain in the spiritual world. And if we go to the spiritual world and all we have is pain, why would we go there? If we have pain in the material world, if we have pain in the spiritual world, what is the difference? So spiritual world should be all bliss. So why we have the gopis fainting and crying, whatever. Looks like the material world again. So we should understand this is not the same thing. This pain in the spiritual world is part of the joy of the spiritual world. It's part of the rasa of the spiritual world. Now we have a mixture of joy and pain in the material world, but that's not rasa at all. It's material rasa. completely different. It is not due to the Atma that we're getting this nice experience in the material world. The spiritual world is the Atma and Krishna. The relationship causes the separation and the pain there, and then the joy and the meaning. In the material world, it's not caused by that spiritual love at all. So therefore, the experiences of separation and meeting and whatever in the spiritual world are all part of the ananda of the spiritual world. And they're not related to anything in the material world. So we have to see this great difference there. So anyway, this whole incident is separation and the meeting of Krishna with the devotees is there to show the exalted nature of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. And they are superior to the yogis and the gyanis and the karmas and even the mixed devotees. So you never think that when Krishna speaks like this, he's pointing out the gyan as higher than bhakti. It's not so. And actually, Krishna is simply disguising things. But the devotees should understand the real truth behind it. Any questions?
Yesterday, we Vrindavan 1 and Vrindavan 2 were there. This segment is told to Vrindavan 2, the devotees, and the devotees are there in Vrindavan, you have few lamas. This segment told to
the external manifestations. Those who are separation, not those who are already. Come back, and when Krishna comes back, not those standards.
Krishna very well knows that these devotees, Parvati, they have no interest to know Krishna as the Supreme Lord or the knowledge about Him. So why then He is explaining this knowledge about Him to devotees?
As I said, it's to hide the fact that and to attract the gyanis and whatever. And so he hides the truth about bhakti. And he gives, the whole Bhagavatam also does this. It presents jnana and yoga, karma, so many things. So people, if they want, they can take other meanings out of it. So that is the nature of scripture. We'll see scripture. In general, why don't we just have Bhagavad Gita? Why do we have the Vedas? Why do we have the other Puranas? Why do we have so many things? And they're offering karma and jnana and yoga and so many other things. Why? Because people have various faiths and various interests, so to attract them, and he has these different things. So there are jnanis. Krishna attracts the jnanis by saying, oh yes, Krishna is also speaking jnana to the yogis, so this is the highest thing. So to give faith in different people, then he presents these different methods also.
So gaining the knowledge of the universe, Brahman, and loving the living object, is part of the yoga or completely separate things?
What do you say, the Brahman hymn?
Loving and knowledge hymn.
Loving what?
Loving the universe. The
loving the universe.
Loving the living object, the human being.
Living object.
Yeah.
Oh, to love human beings, of course, compassion is part of bhakti also. And one of the qualities exhibited by bhakti, one of the first qualities actually, is that one has compassion for all living beings. So the nature of the Atma is also compassion for love. But this is a secondary manifestation from bhakti. The primary quality of bhakti is love for the Supreme Lord. And this automatic manifests compassion for all beings. So it's not a separate cultivation. In the material world, we cultivate these things separately. We try to be compassionate to all living entities. This is an aspect of sattva guna. In the material world. So it's still a material quality. Let us be kind to all living entities. And by doing so, we get a punya. And then we get happiness on earth. And you become very comfortably situated. So that's a punya. in the material world, as far as sattva guna. But when we simply try to please the Lord and do pure bhakti, then naturally the atma manifests compassion for all living entities. But it may manifest in a different way. So instead of giving education or food or shelter to living entities, he tries to give spiritual enlightenment. That's a higher compassion. So therefore, Narada Muni goes around very compassionate, but he doesn't, you know, provide orphanages and fucking yoga to everybody. And that's a compassion.
And this Brahma Jigyasa, that is understanding the whole universe,
yeah,
and understanding about the Jnana, is also part of Bhakti Yoga?
Well, Brahma Jigyasa, as represented in the Vedanta Sutra, they're Brahmanas defined as Krishna by the devotees. Of course, Shankaracharya is not Brahmana, as the impersonal Brahmana. But for the devotees, Tattva Brahma Jigyasa means let us inquire about Supreme Lord. So that's our bhakti. If we're all inquiring about the impersonal aspect of Brahman, that's what the yam is.
The culmination of absolute knowledge, and that's the connector of God.
Absolute knowledge, yeah?
The absolute knowledge.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to put together, the absolute knowledge is different to jnani yoga. And the absolute knowledge of truth, which is true, that's realized.
Mm-hmm. Well, jnana, as we understand it, means the cultivation of knowledge as represented in the Vedanta, with the realization of the impersonal aspect of the Lord called Brahman. That is, we realize God as having no form, no qualities, no activities, no name, but spiritual. That's impersonal, about impersonal realization. Or commonly in India, it's called the white light. So you realize that you merge with God as light. Yes? Light has no form, no qualities. Some sort of spiritual substance. Yes? So when we realize that, that's called Brahman realization. So this is the goal of the Jnanis. Get rid of material existence, material body, and false ego, and subtle body, etc. No more pain, no more rebirth. Yes? So then we enter into the state of mukti. Realization of Brahman. That's the realization of jnana. For the devotee, the realization is that we want to serve Supreme Lord who has a name, form, qualities, and activities. And we serve him with a spiritual body.
That's the same kind of feeling, the absolute kind of sensation.
Yeah, well, in various places, the Lord is explained. He's explained as Brahman, as Paraman, and as Bhagavan, in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Srimad Bhagavatam. We have that.
The gopis are not aware that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, so how do we compare this vis-a-vis what was happening in the material world? That they rejected Vishnu and they just wanted Krishna. Here also we see that people reject Vishnu and they just want their own love.
Well, in the material world, the one has no realization or appreciation of God in any form, whether it's Krishna, where we don't realize him as God, or any form of God, understanding his powers or whatever. No realization at all. And the concentration, of course, is on getting one's own enjoyment. Now, in the spiritual world, no matter what realization of God we have, whether it's Vishnu or Krishna, there's always the understanding that, or the motive that we have no desire for our own enjoyment, we only want to please God, whether he is God with power as Vishnu or as Krishna, where he hides his power. In any case, there's no desire for our own enjoyment, only to please the Supreme Lord. So that's the big difference. Now, in one sense, we can say that in Vrindavan, the inhabitants there are ignorant of God, but there is no ignorance as such in the spiritual world. There is no ignorance in the spiritual world. Everything is full of knowledge. So it's not real an ignorance of Krishna as God, but it's a predominance of understanding the Lord as one's friend or one's child or one's lover. And that is so strong that the idea of God becomes an interruption to that, because when we say God means great, and great means some restriction on our love. So they have no feeling for that. They have no desire to have that type of restriction in their feeling.
But it's not ignorance in the sense of material ignorance understanding.
As in Guru Vrindavan, which form of Krishna is there in Mathura Vasi, or in Guru Vrindavan, which form of Krishna is there?
Which form do you mean?
Means like from Mathura Vasi or Vrindavan Vasi or Dwarka Vasi, which form of Krishna is there?
Well, there are three Goloka, in one sense, that is a little bit vague. There are three dhammas of Krishna in the spiritual world: Dwarka, Mathura, and Raja. They are slightly different, but the same Krishna. But there's a slightly different mood in worshipping that Krishna. So Dwarka is called perfect, Mathura is called more perfect, and Raja is called most perfect. And the reason for that is that in Dwarka, Krishna manifests more powers and displays his offalances, etc., more in what palaces, etc. He has 16,108 queens, and he's worshipped by the Yadavas, etc. In Mathura, of course, he's not in that stage, getting all the queens and whatever, so, and he goes to school, etc. So, there's a mixture there. Still, they understand he is Supreme Lord, because Vasudeva and the Bhakti song come out of the womb, he had four hands, etc. And they know God has come, is appearing in our family. So that's the awareness there. So there's still a mixture of God as Krishna as God, and at the same time God is our family member. And Vrindavan, that is not there. It's only Krishna was born to the Sota of Nanda, and he is our child. Okay, so they don't think of Krishna as God. So that's considered more intense, and therefore most perfect. The same Krishna, but viewed in different ways by different people then. Now there are two parts of Goloka as such. There's what is called Goloka, and there's what is called Gokul. This is described in the Brahma Samhita. So the center is called Gokul. And that is where the inhabitants see Krishna as their lover or son, etc., and they don't see with God at all. In the congregation. And around that, there's another area called Saloka. And in that area, there's a Saloka and the Gopis again. But they also see him as God. So it's something like Dwarka, but he's a cover boy. But they worship him as God at the same time. They ride around in the chariots, people that herd the cows, etc. So this is called Aishwarya World. And so persons who worship Krishna with Vaidhi Bhakti go there. Because of that Vaidhi, they have this idea of Krishna is great, he's also, talent-wise, and then they go to that place. And those who worship Krishna with their Radha, then they go to Gokul. But there's no Vaidhi.
What about the
Mayavadi? Oh, well that of course is another aspect. I don't know where it's situated actually in relation to Goloka and Gokul. You can say that it's somewhat like the center of Gokul because of that Krishna who is in Vrindavan can endure love. It's represented by Lord Chaitanya also, and there's no Vaidhi mixture there also, so it's similar to the center of Goloka, which is Gokul. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is equivalent to Swami Madhava and Krishna there.
Why he does not lead to Radha Nanda Dhamma, so therefore
what
Vaidhi Bhakti does not lead to Radha Nanda Bhakti, So therefore, she has to say that the people who are born in Vaja are only taking the Ravana, and therefore they go to Gokula, whereas others Vaidhi, and therefore they go to Goloka.
Well, it's not necessary that people that do Vaidhi don't go to Ravana, but they may. And people in Vraja may also be Vaidhi Bhaktas, not necessarily Ragnuda Bhaktas in Vrindavan. There's all sorts of people. Some people aren't even devotees there. There's all sorts of people there. There's criminals there, there's whatever. So we had the people in Vrindavan. Now, of course, the spiritual world, that Vraja or that Vrindavan, the spiritual Vrindavan, everybody is a devotee. It's just a devotee. That's there. They're all in Raga. They're not sadhakas there. But as far as material world people, they may be either Vaidhi Bhakti or Sadhana Bhakti. But if they continue with Vaidhi Bhakti, even in Dubhava and Prema, that influence is still there, then they're always influenced by this aspect of seeing Krishna as God. So therefore, they don't enter into the Gokul of the spiritual world because of that. They haven't. So they go to Ashwari Guru instead. So what is the cause of Vaidhi or Raghunuga? It's association. So one may develop Raghunuga Bhakti by association with such persons, or by association with Vaidhi Bhakti, one may develop that.
So within this form, where are we heading?
Well, in the beginning of sadhana, since Bhakti Sanatha's time at least, he recommended in the beginning that we start off with Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, we follow the rules of Pancharatra, which is Vaidhi Bhakti for deity worship, especially in the temples. So later on, that's in my preliminary training. Later on, then one can go to Raga Bhakti, whatever, Raga Bhakti.
What I understand from the statement what you said, that means Vaidhi Bhakti can become Raghunuga Bhakti, at least
a
stage?
Well, it doesn't become, it's a different type. One who is practicing Vaidhi Bhakti then may adopt Raghunuga Bhakti by association with such devotees in mercy of Krishna, by desire. The only qualification for Raghunuga is strong desire to follow after the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Not necessarily, because a lot of persons who are purified by Vaidhi Bhakti may get to Bhava and realize Krishna was Vaidhi Bhakti, and then the prema also through that Vaidhi Bhakti. So it's not necessarily purification itself, but rather the association of devotees which will influence one in a certain direction.
But within the framework of Iskcon, there is no provision for that.
They are encouraged more on Vaidhi. Yeah, in the same also with Bhaktisiddhanta Institute, there was no real provision for Raghunuga. The reason for that is that Raghunuga cannot be legislated or it's not an organizational thing, it's a spontaneous thing. So if someone develops or something and one associates with that person, it can happen. But we can't legislate that these abilities are going to do Vaidhi Bhakti and these ones are going to qualify for Raghunuga Bhakti. It doesn't work that way. It's a matter of association, one's own inspiration. And then Raghunuga by nature is spontaneous, so therefore it cannot be regulated and put in an organization and that sort of thing. But that doesn't mean it's forbidden.
What's the point
of Krishna's very merciful? He gives everybody a chance.
From the beginning, or should they desire to develop that association even though they are is it decided based on their spiritual position, Siddhartha and the spiritual world? Is it decided based on that? What association the person will take when he's in the material world?
Generally, the sadhana one does now will determine what happens in the spiritual world. In other words, if we worship Krishna now, we expect at least we're going to meet Krishna in the spiritual world, and we don't end up with Varaha as our worshipful deity or Krishna, or worshiping Krishna now. So, the sadhana we do now, and the concentration and the devotion we show for a particular deity, that becomes fixed as your goal, and then you will attain that form, rather than some other form. So not only the form, but also the mood attached to it. So by worshipping in a certain mood, then one develops that particular tendency that becomes stronger, and then that becomes one's goal, and then in the spiritual world, that's what you also attain.
What is
the
question?
That,
when the jnanis are going for the light, and they step into the Brahmanjyoti, and when the final annihilation was there, so everything goes into the body of Mahavishnu. And then when he's come back, so what happens with those jnanis?
That's separate. They're beyond creation and destruction. The even up material body is subtle and gross, so there's no material elements attached to them at that point. That Brahman is beyond creation and destruction. That's the mukti.
But they have some missed opportunity to come back to the material world.
No. That mukti is also permanent.
Some of the lectures I heard in this one that one who has attained Brahman may not be necessarily attain Brahman because the nature of the soul is to act and desire. So one cannot always stay in Brahman. Then go up or go down and then come back.
Yeah. Well, we'll find in relation to this verse in, I think it is, Avidhu Krishna Paramparamata, that by great difficulty one attains liberation, the Bhakti Mayanama thinks one is liberated, but then one falls to one's position because one has no devotion to the Lord. So in relation to that, he said that some people desiring liberation almost achieve that position, but they fall down again because of no bhakti. So if we want permanent liberation, even the Yami, then we have to also worship the Supreme Lord to some degree. A little bit, but at least we have to respect the Lord. And so as far as the Yama, there's a little bit of bhakti, maybe 1% bhakti. And we can't offend the Lord. So if you offend the Lord, you can get up to a certain position, almost get liberation, but then no bhakti fall down. So that is where the fall down takes place, on the verge of liberation. And if you do the bhakti, then on the verge of liberation, we give up the jnana because it's up to one only. And what remains is the bhakti, a little bit of bhakti. And the power of that bhakti produces your liberation. Because that's what you want, that Krishna gives it to you. And so that's a permanent thing. And that type of liberation where it's achieved by the bhakti. And if you get close to that, if you don't have any bhakti, then you fall from that position.
So when you have no bhakti, people get bored in the
They
just get bored in that state.
Yeah.
So that doesn't apply for people who are permanently
liberated. Yeah, it looks like on the verge, that stage where they remove the money, they think they're liberated. Well, Krishna is full of all attractive qualities and beauty.
Yeah, so are they attracted to the beauty? I mean the outside beauty or?
And the qualities. Well, outside, inside for Krishna is the same. Beauty means not just the exterior beauty, it means internal beauty or whatever. Yeah. Krishna's internal, external is the same.
And what is it that consists of?
Huh?
The internal beauty, what is that consists of? I mean, what I don't understand is what is the basis of that feeling of love?
It's attraction.
Attraction.
They have greater attraction for him. Krishna is most attractive. Yeah. Of course, what is the basis of it is simply that love. and then it's manifested through attraction of your qualities, forms, activities, and whatever. And what is the basis of the love? Is the nature of Atma. Why do we have love at all? It's because of Atma. The nature of Atma is to love.
What makes the devotees like Brahma and Indra test Krishna, like the...
Oh, usually that is, sometimes it can be if those persons are imperfect and they commit some aparad or something like that, a lower being, then because of those offenses or something, then they can develop some sort of mind. In most cases, however, it's considered that the devotees themselves are actually servants of the Lord, so they're also on a higher level, they're also devotees. So therefore, when Brahma makes a mistake, a so-called mistake, that actually is an arrangement of the Lord. Because at the beginning of Brahma's life, the Lord guaranteed, in this lifetime, he will not become bewildered. So if he does become bewildered, then Krishna has his pastimes. It is only the will of the Lord, it's not real mind. It's only for the pastimes of the Lord.
Did Brahma wrote Brahma Samhita before getting bewildered?
It's not really stated when the Brahma Samhita, which the time it was revealed. But it's revealed as, well, at least when he comes out of the lotus at one time, whether it's the first birth or one day in Brahma sometime or another. I don't know. No. Let's see, jivas in the material world, they have a choice due to association of worshipping any form of the Lord once they get the devotee association. If they associate with people who are worshiping Vishnu, then they may worship Vishnu. And if they associate with worshippers of Rama, then they may worship Rama. So primary depends on association. Mercy of devotees. Well, that's controversial. Because if we come down, then how do we come down? Because you can't fall from the spiritual world. If you do, then why go there? You can fall. So it's all different problems.